Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Locked On Red Sox podcast. I'm Jason Mastrodonato from the Boston Herald, longtime Red Sox reporter and columnist for the Herald, formerly of the Boston Globe. And alongside me is Lauren Campbell, trusty Nesson reporter who covers the Bruins and the Red Sox and everything over at Nesson. We bring you this show every day. We're excited to bring you this one because the Red Sox are suddenly not a playoff team anymore. And there's a lot to dissect as we come out of Tuesday's doubleheader. The Red Sox lose 2 to the Yankees in the Bronx. And all of a sudden you look at the standings and the Red Sox are not a playoff team if the playoffs started today. So there's a lot to talk about. We've got the games to break down. We've got some quotes from Alex Cora that I thought maybe sounded like some frustration with Chaim Bloom over what happened at the trade deadline. We're going to recap what went wrong on Tuesday. So there's a lot to talk about. Stick around for the entire show. This episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. We'll talk more about that later on. So, all right, Lauren, what's your biggest takeaway before we get into all of this? I'll tell you mine from Tuesday, but what was your biggest takeaway from the awful day that the Red Sox had on Tuesday?
I think it was just the offense and that they could not get anything done. I mean, I know you could easily place blame on the bullpen in the first game, but the offense, they had so many chances, especially in the night game, in game two. They had the bases loaded. You had runners on the corners, runners on second and third, and nothing happened. You got shut out, and this is the time when the offense needs to come alive, when you get good pitching from your starters, and they didn't do one thing on Tuesday night in the second game.
Yeah, the offense was bad. And, you know, it was one of those things where I actually didn't think the at-bats were bad. If we're breaking it down, I thought, you know, Hunter Renfro came in off the bench, had a wonderful at-bat late in the second game to create an opportunity for Bobby Dalbec, who ended up lining one off the pitcher, Wandy Peralta, to really destroy an opportunity for the Red Sox late in the second game. But it was a pretty good at-bat from Dalbec, I thought. All things considered, he wasn't trying to hit a home run. He choked up. He just hit a line drive. I didn't see an offense that, to me, looked like we've seen them look bad before. And I didn't see that. So the offense, to me, yeah, they didn't score. But there was nothing that screamed to me terrible. It was more just that they didn't come through today. Like, it just didn't happen, and they pitched well enough. The Yankees just pitched better.
That's what's so frustrating, though, is that these at-bats weren't bad. And Bobby Dalbec, who's been pretty good of late after being terrible for so long, finally is hitting a stride, and that was just bad luck. You know, get right back to the pitcher. I don't know how he stayed with that ball, but that's what's incredibly frustrating to me, is that the at-bats were good, and the at-bats were, they should have produced runs, and they just didn't.
All right, we'll talk more about Dalbec in a bit, because I do want to get your take on that. I want to give you my biggest takeaway from Tuesday, which was, I think you were in the Alex Cora post-game press conference, right?
I was, yes.
I thought I saw your name in there. So I thought the most interesting thing that happened was when Cora was asked about the Yankees, and I'll read you the quote again to remind you. So he said, so the Yankees now are, they have a slight edge in winning percentage over the Red Sox. They've played 2 more games than the Red Sox, I believe, or 2 fewer games.
2 fewer.
2 fewer games than the Red Sox. So they're tied in the standings, in the wild card standings, but the Yankees have a slight edge. So Cora was asked about the Yankees basically moving ahead of them in the standings now. He said, they have a good team. I've been saying it all along. They did some good things throughout when they were struggling with COVID. It started the last homestand here with all the young kids coming up here. Not young kids, some of them were actually veterans at AAA, coming up and playing a different brand of baseball. That's a different team than early in the season. They're more agile, more versatile, more athletic. And the one thing they've done throughout the season is they can pitch. And so, to me, I thought it was really interesting to hear him say that this is a team, I mean, like he said, a lot of guys, like veterans at AAA. I mean, the guy who really came through for them in game one was a guy I'd never heard of before, Andrew Velasquez, who until today had 112 big league plate appearances and 3 RBIs. And I think 135 batting average. until today when Tanner Houck, a big fan of this guy, but just left a fastball right over the plate to the nine hitter. I know you don't want to walk the guy, but I mean, it was a juicy pitch, and Velasquez comes through with two RBIs, essentially wins the game for the Yankees in game one. This is guy, a career minor leaguer, and these are the guys that the Yankees have been using. They've had, I think, 20 guys on the injured list. They've had COVID outbreaks multiple times throughout the season, and they're just calling up guys from AAA. Yeah, some of these are young kids, but some of them are just career minor leaguers. Guys like Tyler Wade, all of a sudden they're this team that's playing fast. They had, I pulled up a stat before, the Yankees stole 20 bases in the first half of the season. In the second half, which is only 3-4 weeks old now, it's about a month old actually, second half of the season now, they already have 25 stolen bases. And then they stole two more today. So actually they have 27 steals in the second half. They had 20 in the entire first half. So it's a team that is now faster, as Alex Cora is saying. They're more versatile, as Alex Cora is saying. I mean, Tyler Wade plays every single position. This guy Velasquez can move around. They have center fielder Jonathan Davis, who's like, looks like a wide receiver running out there catching flies in center field. This is a team that now all of a sudden isn't just old guys who can hit that they're forcing in positions that they really can't play. Remember early in the season, their defense was terrible. And we're like, who is this Yankees team? They can't even field. And so Cora pointing that out and saying how, hey, they're using these 4A guys and these young guys, but they're actually faster, they're more versatile, they're better. I took that as, and maybe I'm overthinking this, you could tell me, but I took that as they did what I want to do. I want, because Cora always says he wants his teams to be versatile. He wants his teams to play good defense, to move around, to be quick and aggressive. Well, what did they do at the trade deadline? They got slower. They got less versatile. They used JD Martinez in right field and Kyle Schwarber in DH. I mean, that's not a team that's versatile and faster. That's a team that now has two DHs and is using both of them in both games on Tuesday. They're less versatile than they've ever been. And, you know, so I kind of looked at that and said, maybe that was a thinly veiled comment towards Chaim Bloom and like, you know, look at this team over here. They're faster. They're playing. They're more versatile. Look what you did to us. Like, we don't even have a first baseman now, and I have two DHs on this team.
Yeah, and we talked about this in a previous show where the teams around the Red Sox got better, and the Red Sox just kind of stayed the same. And it's really showing, especially in these last two games. And I kind of thought the same thing about Cora maybe saying, like, not taking a jab at Chaim Bloom, but kind of being like, I need help. You knew what I needed for this team, and it didn't happen. And I think it was in 2019, he said something similar that was like, I can only do so much with what's in front of me. Mm. And this came, again, after the trade deadline where nothing really substantial happened. And I know, I keep going back to that this Red Sox season was supposed to be not a wash, but just kind of, you know, a laid-back kind of year. And they weren't supposed to be this good. I get that. But when they were, and now they're all of a sudden not good, it's all happening really after the trade deadline. I mean, they were up 9.5 games on the Yankees on July 26th. That's not even a month for the
Yankees
to game.
Wow.
So not even a month later, the Yankees have gained all this ground because they got better. And it pains me to say this as a lifelong Red Sox fan, that they're an incredibly resilient team this year. They've faced a lot, like the COVID outbreaks, the injuries. Just at one point, we were questioning whether Aaron Boone was going to keep his job, and now it's like it looks like it's completely safe. So a lot has happened, I just feel like, in the last week, let alone the last month. And this Red Sox team, it's clear that they did not get any better at the trade deadline. Like, yeah, Schwarber adds a nice piece to your lineup, but did you really need him? No. You needed that bullpen help, and Austin Davis and Hansel Robles are not the answer.
Yeah. And Schwarber, for his part, was on base three times in six plate appearances. So, you know, he got on base. You know, he had a couple singles, I think, in key spots in the seventh inning of game one to give them a chance. And in game two, I think it was the fifth inning that he singled to give them a chance. So he is making a slight difference in the lineup. He's not, you know, jacking the ball out of the park yet, which I don't think anyone expected him to. He hasn't played in a month and a half. But he is making a slight difference in the lineup. The problem, of course, is that now Hunter Renfroe is playing center field on Tuesday. They've got JD Martinez in right field, and he he almost made a mess out of one in game two. A ball kind of hit right at him that he stumbled onto and barely got his glove on. I thought it was going to bounce over him as he fell over and turn into a triple or inside the Parker. So they're just, this isn't the way that they're supposed to be lined up. And you look across the diamond and it's just a totally different team. We're going to talk more about this coming up in the second part of the show. We are brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. This app is free to download, and once you're in, you could talk with fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team. Green Room is the perfect place to join a conversation. If you have something to say, you're looking for other people with similar interests, you want to talk, you want to argue, you want to just make some friends, this is the place to do it. You'll find fans just like you in Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to big news or rumors. You can even find some of the Locked On hosts across all the sports in the Green Room. So go download the free Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the Red Sox group for the latest updates. I know you'll find a ton of incredible rooms for the Red Sox and other things that you might be interested in over there. So download the Green Room app today. Okay, so I'm looking at the Yankees depth chart right now, and I hate to rub it in, Red Sox fans, I really do. But I just want to run through this real quick because I think it's remarkable. Here are the guys that are currently on the injury list for the New York Yankees. Corey Kluber, Domingo Germán, Michael King, Aroldis Chapman, Darren O'Day, Clay Holmes, Anthony Rizzo is on the COVID list, Miguel Andujar, Gio Urshela, Gleyber Torres, Clint Frazier, Aaron Hicks, Tim LeCastro. There's some huge names out for the Yankees right now. They're using guys, again, that they're just, I haven't even heard of half these guys that they're playing. This kid Velasquez who came through today. So this is a team, like you said, they have been through adversity. And what's remarkable is this Yankees team, they are doing what the Red Sox were doing earlier in the season. They're winning close games. They're an MLB best 45-23 in games decided by two runs or fewer. They've won five games in their current winning streak by a total of just nine runs. So is this Yankees team scary, Lauren? Like, who do you got going forward here?
Yeah, I think they are scary. I think you have to be scared of them at this point because they're doing a lot with not a lot. You know, they're winning these games. And yes, they're close games, but again, these are games that the Red Sox should have won. I mean, game one especially was winnable. Game two, you had all these opportunities to open the game up or at least take a slim lead. And they're finding ways to win. And I feel like we were talking like this about the Red Sox not that long ago. They were finding ways to win. They were grinding out wins, whether it was 2-1, 8-0, it was consistently finding ways to win. And that's now what the Yankees are doing. I know there's a lot of baseball left to be played. I know that a lot still can happen. It's just two games that they lost. It's a lot when the Yankees got better at the trade deadline. They're winning games with their AAA team throughout their roster. Like you said, yeah. Guys you've never heard of are beating the Red Sox with veterans like J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, players that are well-known. And then you have somebody coming in who's just like, hi, I'm new here. And just, you know, makes it seems like it's just easy. And, I mean, I still think the Red Sox have enough to take that second place spot in the AL East. I don't think that it's going to be the Yankees for long, but it's going to be a battle at the end of the day. Like,
why do you think the Yankees aren't going to hold on?
Because I feel like we go through this all the time. Like, just as MLB fans, that the Yankees kind of put together a run and then they end up falling apart. And the Red Sox have done that too. Don't get me wrong. We've seen that plenty of times. We know darn well that's exactly what could happen. But I just feel like as resilient of the Yankees, as the Yankees have been, the Red Sox have that in them too. I think that they have a really good manager. They do have good players. And it's the only thing that like kind of stresses me out is that they don't really have injuries right now. You know, like it's not like the Yankees are when they're waiting for all these people to come back. The Red Sox aren't waiting on that. And I think that's the only thing that kind of raises the biggest red flag where the Yankees, again, can get better with just getting their players back and not even doing anything, just getting their players back and getting the lineup back to what they envisioned it would be at the beginning of the year. So now it's just a matter of the Red Sox needing to go back to this gritty baseball, grinding out wins, finding ways to win games, and just never getting themselves out of games. You know, they put themselves in position to win.
Yeah, Nathan Eovaldi said that after the game, that, you know, there are a lot of games we had a chance, we were in position to win, and we didn't, and that's what killed us. And I think he even mentioned the fact that they weren't playing good teams and blowing some of those games. You know, against the Tigers, where there was some valuable games in there, that's what Eovaldi said, that we let them slip away. And I think they're feeling it. You know, I definitely think they're feeling it. You listen to Eovaldi, you know, you listen to Alex Cora, you know, he says it doesn't matter. And he said it's not deflating. We just lost, whatever. We'll come back tomorrow. I think they're feeling it. I think you could see it. And you can really have seen it, I think, for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, if you look at the numbers, what is it? Since July 26th, the Red Sox are 7-14. The Yankees have gone 17-5. You know, we talk about the Red Sox. Well, you can't trade for anyone better than Chris Sale at the trade deadline. They got him back. Well, the Yankees got Luke Voit back. I mean, this is a guy who led the league in homers last year and had the decisive hit, a home run off Nathan Eovaldi in the second game on Tuesday. So they got Luke Voit back in that lineup. And you look at the two lineups, and it's like, how are the Yankees outscoring the Red Sox with the lineups that they're running out there on Tuesday? It's crazy. And they didn't even play good defense. I mean, Tyler Wade had a terrible error in game two. Yeah, I thought the Red Sox were going to take advantage of. They didn't. There's just something going on right now with this Red Sox team. There's just something missing. I want to get your take on Bobby Dalbec. So he's been hot, like you said. But they got Travis Shaw. And even in day one, where Travis Shaw's back on this team, and it's pretty clear they're in a platoon. Shaw gets the start in game two against the right-hander. Dalbec starting game one against the left-hander. They pinch hit in a very clear platoon way. Dalbec pinch hit against the lefty. Shaw had pinch hit against the righty early in game one. Are you okay with this, with Travis Shaw coming in and taking Bobby Dalbec's at-bats?
So yes and no. Because Shaw was brought in simply because they need that depth at first base. He was productive in 2015 and 2016 when he was here. Yes, that was... what, 5-6 years ago, that the last time he was with the Red Sox organization. But at the same time, Bobby Dalbec's heating up at a time he needs to. He was really struggling. People were calling for him to just be benched. And, you know, Boston fans are very impatient and get very angry very easily. And the second he turned it around, it was like, oh, yeah, I always had faith in this guy. Like, it's great. but no, because I'm also a big proponent of, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And that's exactly what I feel like is happening right now. You have to let him stay hot, and you have to let Dalbec just kind of either come back down to earth, and then you start kind of easing Shaw in a platoon way. Or he just let him stay hot and find other places for Shaw to play. I mean, you're finding ways to put Schwarber in the lineup. You're finding ways to put JD in the outfield when he probably shouldn't be in the outfield. And we've seen that over the years. So I know when they brought Shaw in, I knew that it obviously was for this reason. I don't mind him taking the at-bats from Bobby Dalbec per se, just when it's necessary, not when it shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, so you think Dalbec should be starting every day at first base mostly?
I think until he cools down, yeah, because it's working for him right now. He's on a hot streak. That's got to be good for his confidence. I mean, he was so down for so long, and he's finally getting it back up. And now it's just like, we're gonna platoon you. Like, I don't know what that does to somebody's confidence, somebody's like mental focus. I don't know, but I just feel like if he's in a good spot, you keep doing that. You keep riding the hot hand until he cools off.
I will give you this: his three home runs that he had in the Orioles series all came against right-handers, and he's obviously struggled against righties. His numbers on the year are still terrible against righties, but I mean, they all came against right-handers. So if you're looking for a reason to feel good about Dalbec, maybe that's it. And you're right, for once he finally does look confident. And again, I thought his at bat late in game two was a really good at bat against the left-handed pitcher. Key moment in the game, chokes up, doesn't try to do too much, just looks like he's just trying to hit a single, and that's what they want to see out of him. He's got enough power where he can run into home runs on accident. He doesn't need to try to hit them. He's just trying to hit a single, and that's the Bobby Dalbec I think people are going to want to see. The problem is he's still been terrible against righties for the majority of the year. I don't know how much to read into a hot streak when there's really only two games against the worst team in baseball that he had three homers. And before that, it was the huge game against Tampa, which, as we talked about at the time, was against a pitcher who ate his lunch, as Dennis Eckersley would say, or had his lunch handed to him, in Josh Fleming. And then the triple that he got awarded, which was really just a pop fly. And then I think he had a couple RBIs off of the backup catcher. So I don't know how much I'm reading into this hot streak by Bobby Dalbec. But I think Cora is going to give Travis Shaw a chance. And it's not going to be a long one, because Dalbec's at least proving to be competent of late. And so I think he's definitely going to get more playing time. There's a lot, you know, we talk about the Red Sox not having much flexibility with this lineup right now. There's a lot going on. There's some moving parts here. Hunter Renfro's all of a sudden playing center field. Jaron Duran, it looks like, is like an afterthought. Like, doesn't it feel like they've just kind of given up on this guy already?
It's funny because, you know, Cora was asked about that today during game one, and he's like, oh yeah, we'll find ways for him to play. But it wasn't like a confident, like, oh yeah, like he's gonna play. He played in game two, yes, but it wasn't, to me it was just like, not that he was bypassing the question, but it was just like, yeah, we're gonna find reasons and games for him to play, and that was that. But I wouldn't say giving up on him, but certainly just kind of like pushing him to the side a little bit, because he's not necessarily needed. Even though his speed is needed, it's just like he's not really producing, I guess, the way that they imagined he would. And that's fair. He just came from the minors. But at the end of the day, it's like you brought him up. You told the media that he was here to stay, and that he was not going back down to Worcester. So play the guy.
Yeah, it is surprising. I think this is what happens when you bring in Schwarber. You know, we thought Schwarber was going to take Bobby Dalbec's at-bats. Schwarber's taking Jaron Duran's at-bats, because all they did was move Renfro to center now. JD's playing the outfield. Verdugo looks like he's in a platoon, which I think, you know, we've kind of been talking about should have happened already, because he's not having a great year. Certainly not doing anything against lefties. So Verdugo's not going to play against lefties, that's for sure. Jaron Duran's not going to play against lefties either. So it looks like JD's going to be playing the outfield against lefties. So Jaron Duran maybe against righties is going to get some playing time. We'll see. Maybe not. You know, maybe it looks like they still want to keep playing Renfro even against right-handers. So what does that mean for Duran? I don't know. I think it's going to be tough for him to get in the lineup right now unless somebody really cools off. And Schwarber looks perfectly competent. They'll probably just keep DHing him. They say they're going to keep trying him at first base. They say they're going to get him in the outfield pretty soon. But why bother? I mean, if the guy's got a bum hamstring that they kind of forced him back from, and he hurt his groin while he was doing it, just keep him healthy. Let him DH. Let JD play the outfield. He's fine. He'll make some mistakes out there. But I think Jaron Duran's going to be on the bench for a while. So, all right, coming up in the third segment of our show, we have, as always, our unpopular opinions. We'll end the show on a positive note. We are brought to you by Built Bar. Did you know that Built Bar has, 9 delicious flavors? There's something for everyone. I currently am on a raspberry kick. I'm just liking the way it kind of goes with the chocolate. It tastes good. I love the Built Bar because there's not a lot of sugar. I'm eating way too much sugar in my diet as it is. Trying to cut the sugar, you only get 4 or 5 grams of sugar in the Built Bar, 17 to 18 grams of protein, and only 130 to 180 calories. If you haven't tried the Built Bar, give it a shot. You can get the mix box where you get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. And we have a special offer for you from Locked On. If you use the promo code LOCKED15, you can get 15% off your order at Built.com. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Isn't that neat? And you'll get 15% off your order with the promo code LOCKED15. We're brought to you by BetOnline, the easiest and fastest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's getting crazy right now, and you can check the odds over at BetOnline. I looked this morning, and the Red Sox were behind pretty much everybody in the futures. It's like the Blue Jays, the A's, the Yankees, any American League team you can think of, the Red Sox are getting better odds than them. If you're a betting type of person and you want to bet on the Red Sox, now's the time to do it, because the odds aren't going to get any better unless they just completely fall off track here. So go to betonline.ag, sign up on your laptop or mobile device, check out all the news that they have, the odds, the bonuses. You can get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. So go to BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, promo code LOCKEDON for 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All right, we're back with our unpopular opinions. It's been a while, Lauren, since we've had these, because I was away for the weekend, and I am curious to hear what you got, so I want you to go first.
So my unpopular opinion is Munoz is doing fantastic in AAA. He had his 35-game hit streak. It did come to an end Tuesday night with the Woo Sox, but I know that people are antsy for him to be called up right now. It should not happen. And I just think he should stay in Worcester. Also, I don't know where you would put him. Where would you put him in this roster? There's already shuffling going around with, you know, Jaron Duran losing his at-bats, Bobby Dalbec kind of platooning right away when he was on this hot streak. So as powerful and as great as he has been in AAA, let's just keep him there, build that confidence. September's right around the corner. Call-ups are right around the corner. So,
Lauren.
Yes.
First base.
So, again.
Right?
But you brought in Travis Shaw.
Right.
Christian Arroyo's coming back. Are you going to throw him again at first base? And then Kyle Schwarber, you continue to say, not you, but Alex Cora continues to say that, oh, yeah, we'll try him at first base. So, there is just a log jam at first base. So, I think we should just keep him down in Worcester. Again, September call-ups are coming. Do it then. Don't rush him, because then you're just going to be sending him up and down like Tanner Houck.
Yeah, if you call up Yairo Munoz now, it's kind of sending a message that, you know, we're terrified. We don't know what else to do.
It'd be a panic move.
Yeah, here's a 4A guy. But I don't know. At the same time, what's his hit streak? 34 games?
35. It came to an 35? End at 35.
Oh, my God. I mean... Yep. I don't know how anyone in the locker room could be upset if a guy with a 35-game hit streak comes up from the minors. I mean, he is, and it's not just like he's a power guy, right? I mean, he's hitting for average down there. Yep. He's hitting doubles. He's stealing bases. He plays every position. Hey, Cora's talking about get more versatile and get faster, and this could be the guy. I don't know. I totally get what you're saying. Wait till September. And I'm sure they're going to give Travis Shaw a look here, but if Shaw doesn't come through and you need someone to give you a little bit of energy, I would try him. I would try him out.
And that'll bring you right to September for the September call-ups.
Perfect. So I'm actually with you. I just argued myself into being on your side of this one.
That's what I do around here.
All right. I don't know if this is an unpopular opinion or not, but I've got it, and I just have to get it off my chest because Tanner Houck's being sent to the minors again. What's new? And I get it. Again, they've used the doubleheader to not actually officially give him any major league service time because it's an unofficial call-up where they call him up for one day. He's the 27th man on the roster for a doubleheader. I think he's made 6 starts this year, and I want to say 4 of them have been in doubleheaders. Let me double-check this. 7 starts this year. And I believe 4 of them have been a doubleheader. So they've basically manipulated the crap out of his service time here, keeping him in the minors and letting him start. The thing that I don't like about it, and listen, I get it. You send him back down. Okay, now we get to have an extra guy. Jonathan Araruz will stay on the roster. Hey, he's a pinch runner in the 9th. So you add, you keep a tiny bit of flexibility now with one extra position player in Jonathan Araruz on the roster. So that's what you have. Now you're giving Alex Cora, a guy who can run a little bit, who's really played terrible defense and doesn't do anything with the bat. But okay, Cora has one extra guy to play with. And what's the cost of doing business that way? Well, the cost is you have a 25-year-old player who's arguably been one of your best pitchers all year, unquestionably the most important pitcher you have in your farm system. And you're roping him back and forth. The guy's been up and down like 100 million times this year. I mean, actually, I think it's like 7. But how do you treat this guy like a robot? He's a human being. He's on the bus back and forth from Worcester to Boston or wherever it is that they're traveling. Oh, you're flying with the team today. Oh, actually, you know what? Now you're back flying commercial. You're going to fly back. You're going to do this. Now you're going back up. Now you're coming back down. I mean, he's handling it well. I thought he had a good quote today. He said they've been straightforward about everything. They've communicated since day one. I tell them I'm here to do whatever they need me to do. I do what I got to do. It's in God's hands now. You know, that's how I stay mentally focused. Good for him for being able to do it. But I think we get lost as an industry sometimes in baseball where We just do everything the most efficient way possible, statistically, but we do it from our computers, where we're looking at the spreadsheet and saying, okay, well, we could move this guy off the roster here and save a few days on a service time there and you know, keep an extra guy there. These are human beings. They're not robots. You can't just move them around on a spreadsheet. These are people. And when you're constantly telling one of your best players he's not good enough to be in the majors and he gets sent back down 7 times throughout the season, it's going to have an effect on him. And he's handling it great. I don't know what the long-term effect's going to be. I'm surprised there hasn't been a meltdown at some point where he just comes up and he's like, I'm exhausted from doing this. I'm surprised he hasn't lost confidence. But I think it's crazy. Just keep him on your roster already. Let the guy breathe. Let him be around Chris Sale every day and learn. Let him talk to Nathan Eovaldi on the plane every day. Let him learn things. Ugh.
There's definitely benefits for him to be on the roster, and you named two big ones right there with Chris Sale, Nate Eovaldi, being around the veterans and being able to learn. And I think, too, I mean, he did say that it's, you know, this is how he lives his life. It's just a mental thing that it's how he lives his entire life. And that's incredibly, like, strong, because I know if it were me, even if I knew it was coming, it would still be really tough for me to go up and down and be between two teams when I know I'm good enough to be on the major league team, but I keep getting demoted to the AAA team. I think a big part of it is that they have been so honest, they have been so straightforward about what his place is. At the end of the day, he knows he's going to be a big part to this team, and he's going to be a huge asset to them. It's just kind of a matter of when at this point. And for him to be, or for the Red Sox to be so open with their communication with Hauk, I think that gives him some time to prepare, like, okay, you're going to go down for a couple of days and you're going to come back up. And so, like, that just goes on and on throughout the season. I think he's done enough to prove that he should be a mainstay on this roster. And like you, I totally understand why the Red Sox are doing it. I get the roster flexibility. I get the manipulation there where you have the extra person there. I get it. I totally understand that. But like you said, Tanner Houck is a human being. He's a 25-year-old kid, really. And in my eyes, I think he's done enough to stay. And regardless of your roster flexibility, I think he's done enough. And I think that him being here full-time with the Red Sox has more benefits than cons by any means.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think everybody would say he's certainly done enough. But, you know, the Red Sox, I don't know, don't see the benefits. The benefits don't outweigh the negatives, I guess, of keeping him around a Hall of Fame pitcher every day to learn from. Okay, we always end the show on a positive note. I made you go first before, so I'll go first this time. I did this with my colleague Steve Hewitt on Monday. We were looking at the remaining schedules for all of the teams in the American League that are competing for a playoff spot. So if you're looking for a sliver of hope, a silver lining, something to feel good about, here it is. The Red Sox have one of the easiest schedules left in the American League. Their combined winning percentage of the teams they have left to play against, so this is before they just played two against the Yankees, factoring in the number of games left against each team, the average winning percentage of every game they have left to play is .487. Now, they are scoring a full run per game more against teams under .500 than teams over .500. They have beat up on bad competition this year. So this is some hope for the Red Sox. There's a lot of cookies on the schedule. I've looked at it. You know, they've still got some plenty of games with the Orioles left. The Twins have been terrible. The Indians have pretty much given up. You know, they got some easy ones here. The Yankees have a harder schedule. Tampa has a harder schedule. The Blue Jays do not. The Blue Jays actually have an easier schedule. But the Oakland A's have one of the hardest schedules left in baseball, an average winning percentage of .532. And as of recording this on Tuesday night, Oakland, New York, and Boston are all tied for the two wildcard spots. So, listen, you got to beat the good teams if you want to win the World Series, but they just want to get in the playoffs right now. And so they just got to beat up on some bad teams and they'll have a shot.
And we saw them beat up on some bad teams over the weekend in the Orioles. So it's certainly good that their schedule remains easy for the rest of the way, because their starting pitching, and this is my positive takeaway, has been pretty good the last couple games, couple weeks even. Erod looks like he's come back into form. Nate Eovaldi is giving his team a chance to win. Chris Sale, obviously getting him back is huge. He'll eventually go more than 5 innings. I think it's smart right now just to not throw him to the wolves and have him go 8, but 8 strikeouts in 5 innings, not bad. So he's only going to get better as time goes on. Nick Pivetta has been really good. And it's just Tanner Houck, obviously. So at the end of the day, their pitching is doing everything they can to win. It's just the offense needs to really start to get going. And if they have such an easy schedule, or one of the easier schedules for the rest of the season, their starting pitching is clicking. This is the recipe to go on a pretty substantial run.
Yeah, and it's a good point about the starting pitching. I mean, they have been great. The bullpen is not. I mean, the last 12 days, the bullpen has an 8.39 ERA. They really struggled in the first game on Tuesday. But you would think they have the starting rotation lined up now. They got Sale back. They are using Tanner Houck, even though they keep sending him down. You know, Evaldi's pitching great. Erod's looking better. The rotation is there. You got rid of the two biggest, clogs in that rotation, and Richards and Perez, and put them in the bullpen. They've got the rotation. They've got the schedule to do it. All they got to do is just stick around until they get to that final week. They finished the season with 7 games against the Nationals and the Orioles. The Nationals just traded everybody away. The Orioles are a laughingstock. And yes, I know, in 2011, they ended the season against the Orioles, who had nothing to play for other than to annoy the Red Sox and ruin their season, and they did it. So there's always going to be that factor of these bad teams playing spoiler. But on paper, the Red Sox should handle these guys. So we always end the show on a positive note. We'll end it there. We'll be back on Thursday for another show recapping the final game of the Red Sox-Yankees series. Should be a good one. If the Red Sox lose, they'll be swept by the Yankees. Gosh, that would be some difficult momentum to come back from. So we'll be back on Thursday. You could follow us on Twitter. I'm at jmastrodonato, or read my work in the Boston Herald.
And I'm at lalalalauren, 3 laws, Lauren with 4 R's. And the Locked On Red Sox Twitter is lo_Red Sox. And you can read all of my work on nesson.com.
Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon. This episode was brought to you by the Locked On Bets podcast. Betting on sports doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the podcast, it's hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. They'll give you daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag.